I'm Vince Colonnais with the excellent Mary Walter.
Thank you. And joining us right now, Peter Morici. He's an economist with the University of Maryland. Good morning and happy Friday, Peter.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Let's talk about the President Trump hitting the ground in Davos running. He had a dinner last night with European world leaders and titans of industry from companies like Adidas and Siemens and Bayer. And it was a little odd, but they went around the table congratulating the President on the tax cuts and then telling him what they were going to do as far as their companies and investment in America. Is he going to bring back the kind of deals he brought back from that five-country Asian tour? Billions and billions of dollars?
Well, I don't know if bringing back deals is necessarily the right phrase. He's made America a much more attractive place to be in again. For a variety of reasons, taxes is one. And so now there's more interest in investing here. I mean, companies do hard cost calculations. There was an interesting article yesterday about a drug company that does its R&D here and has been manufacturing the test drug, so to speak, in China, and is now decided that it would prefer to manufacture for sale here or in Europe. And then based on the new tax law, it decided, well, heck, we can do it in an East Coast city. And we're seeing decisions like that over and over again. You have to remember that the United States had become uncompetitive. That's why this is different than, say, when they cut corporate taxes back in Kennedy's time. We have been standing by while other people have cut their corporate taxes, and we have become uncompetitive. So it's kind of a binary decision. I'm expecting quite an impulse from this. So, basically businesses are saying thank you.
Yeah, I think we're waiting on a GDP number today, are we not? So we should get some indicators of what the economy is doing.
Yeah, we should, but I wouldn't view that as an indicator of the impact of this tax law.
Mm-hmm.
We're expecting a number close to 3%. Now, if he hits 3, then he will have 3 consecutive quarters of 3%, and we haven't seen that since around 2004, 2005. No surprise, Mr. Obama never accomplished that, but when you have a economic policy based on issuing a new telephone book of rules every day and basically talking about nothing but increasing taxes or actually affecting that, you get the likely result. People flee from you like a house contaminated by the plague.
The Dow has closed at a new record high for the 10th time already this year. I think a lot of people watch this and they get nervous, of course, because this much success always leaves a little bit of doubt in the back of your mind and says, wait a second, can this hold? Can it always be this good? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think these valuations are justified because we had a big jump in corporate profits last year. And not all of that Mr. Trump can take any credit. But we had a big jump. And if you look at the price-earnings ratio, which is a very good indication of undervaluation, overvaluation, what have you, it's not any higher this year for the S&P 500, which is 80% of the publicly traded equities, than it was last year at this time. In fact, it's lower. So, the U.S. stock market, this boom has largely been paid for with more profits, which you would expect. Now, there is somewhat more confidence about things because we see the rollbacks in regulation. And here, we're not throwing the book out the window. People are still being regulated. We're just not making companies spend most of their time communicating with bureaucrats in Washington who never earned an honest nickel. And, let's face it, it's kind of nice having the regulators take lunch again, weekends off, summer vacations. Every morning, more than 100 regulators get up and go to work inside the offices of J.P. Morgan. They're right there in the office building. I mean, they're looking over your shoulder at the water cooler. That's absurd. That's just no way to run an economy. A lot of these folks that are working in the bureaucracy are screaming bloody murder. That's why we have all these resignations at the State Department. I have a very good suggestion for them. They are so appalled by Mr. Trump. Maybe they should go spend the summer in Haiti, and they can tell us where they would prefer to live, Hastings on the Hudson or Haiti. Maybe then they could give us their opinion of that location as a place to live and find new workers. And ask themselves, would they hire them at the Commerce Department?
I want to ask you about the stock market and what sectors do you think are going to do well? Are we still going to see stocks that have been skyrocketing like Amazon and Apple and Walmart? Can they continue
that
to climb up?
That is why we should be concerned about where we're going next. The question is, can companies like Apple continue to build profits. I'm skeptical about Apple because just about everybody that could have a phone has a phone. And so the issue there is market share, and they keep growing the way the tobacco companies do, by raising prices. Other technology companies are more broadly based, like Google and Microsoft. And so, you know, I think there we can be more optimistic. But to really see the market continue to grow, we're going to have to see old performers straighten out their houses. For example, IBM. IBM continues to deliver disappointing results. That doesn't mean that IBM doesn't have some fine products. And I'm not talking, you know, you see Watson on TV. There's other things that IBM does and does very well. The trouble is it's in a mature market now for those products, and they don't grow very rapidly. Mm-hmm. Also, outfits like Procter & Gamble, we have to ask ourselves, who's going to replace Procter & Gamble and General Electric? These companies that have lots of different products, whether you call them conglomerates or not. But, you know, hair care and makeup has nothing to do with floor wax or the stuff that you use to clean your bathroom. Mm-hmm. But it's all under one roof in these consumer product companies, and they really don't make sense. And whenever they talk about reforming at either GE or Procter & Gamble, they never talk about, or IBM, they never talk about cutting compensation in the C-suite and how that ripples down into compensation overall for companies that are more appropriately sized.
Peter Morici, I want to one more on Trump here, because he signaled yesterday that he's open to re-entering the Trans-Pacific Partnership after Canada announced a deal without the United States. What did you make of that yesterday?
I think that it would be smart to do that. The Trans-Pacific Partnership was not fundamentally flawed. It had some problems, okay? But if you look at what needs to be updated, for example, in NAFTA, and both Mexico and Canada are involved in the TPP, less the United States, it contained a lot of the elements of updating NAFTA, you know, for a digital age and so forth. The way to solve our problems is not to disengage with the world, not to insist on bilateral agreements. You know, this notion of bilateral agreements, there are no takers. No one's interested except perhaps Britain because it's going through a messy divorce. Our trade policy has the correct goals, but the wrong strategies. I seriously question the quality of leadership he has in that area. One of the problems that Trump has is a great suspicion of economists and people who are sort of, you know, expert in those areas, and he kind of relies on Jared.
Right.
And unfortunately, Jared's only real qualification is he inherited a lot of money. There, you know, this is not a family hotel in New Hampshire. And sometimes I think Mr. Trump doesn't adequately understand that or appreciate that. His loyalty to his children and his family are misplaced when he imports it into the West Wing.
All right. Well, Peter, thank you so much for joining us. It's Peter Morici, economist with the University of Maryland. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Take care.